With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, a podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I'm joined by cool producer Joel.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, Joel. How's it going, Joel? We are very late releasing the podcast this week.
We are.
And for those of you who are regulars to the podcast, you will know that last week, Joel's girlfriend had COVID. And Joel was going to be stuck in the house for 10 days. Joel, what's happened since then?
I've got it.
You've got COVID.
Yeah.
You seem pretty chipper right now.
Yeah.
You sounded, I mean, I think it was only text, but you didn't sound chipper when you, when you had it.
No, like a few days this week where I was just completely wiped out. I felt like I'd been hit by a bus.
People say that, yeah. Felt like you had been hit by a bus. So what? Oh, just aching and...
I had just no energy. Like, getting up out of bed and walking around the flat was just knackering. It was so, really? I was so tired, yeah.
Did you have chest issues? Are you all right?
No. It was just...
Oh, that's good then.
Yeah, it was just the exhaustion. And, yeah, it wasn't much fun.
No, how long have you got to stay in the flat for now?
I can't until Wednesday. I'll be doing 16 days in total in the flat.
Oh, so we will record next week's podcast.
Yep.
And you'll still be in here. The flat.
16 days in a one-bedroom flat.
How are you feeling about it?
Not like great. The weather's amazing.
And your girlfriend's been able to go out and run around in the lake.
Yeah, she's just been out. She just went for a run, actually, and I think she's going to the lake later, yeah.
the old Stratford Lake.
Yeah.
That's annoying. Is she rubbing it in your face, or is she being nice about it?
She's been very nice about it. Because it's, yeah. I mean, it's her fault, isn't it? So,
is it? Yeah. Does she feel guilty about it?
Not as guilty as I'd like her.
Yeah. Oh no. So at least you've got the Euros to keep you busy for the next.
Yes,
few
please.
Days. That's nice. I don't know. But who's on today?
Today, time at recording. It's
who's, okay,
Saturday.
Let's do this. This is a bit of fun. Who's going to win the Euros?
France.
France are going to. You've heard it here first, everybody. Go get down to your local betting shops. Lots of
and put everything
available.
You own on France.
Everything you own on France. Why are they going to win, Joel?
They're just very, very, very good. They won the World Cup in 2018. They've got the best first 11 and the best strength and depth in their squad of any team. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion. They're also used to...
There are other teams, aren't there?
There are other teams up going for it.
How many teams are going for it?
I would say five.
Five teams are going for it.
Yeah.
Oh, England, one of those teams.
Yes.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. Where are England going to finish? Because you know all about football, like in depth,
think England can make it to the final, but I would say likely out in the semis.
And will England go against France? Is it set up that
they would play them in the final? I think, yeah.
Oh, so you've already set it up. You've got it. That's what's happening.
Can you imagine? Imagine the country if we were playing France in the final of the Euros. It'd be
especially with all the fishing issues.
God. Yeah, exactly.
Crikey! That's going to heat up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, there you go. You heard it here first. That's a bit of fun. I hope everybody enjoys the Euros.
What's it like, Mark, gigging during an international tournament? Is it a pain in the arse?
Yes.
Because I used to work at a wedding venue. I'm sure we've talked about it lots of times before.
And obviously, on 361 jokes, five at a time.
Yeah, and summer weddings, obviously, that's the height of the season for getting married. Mm. And when there's an international tournament, especially when there's an England game on, it does disrupt a wedding, and lots of people leave early, or you know, the bride and groom will make a concession. Yeah, exactly. Or they'll just sometimes they just say, look, put a big screen up and we'll have the game on, you know.
Yeah,
just because otherwise no one will go.
I think as a wedding, you've got to embrace it, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. That's my dishwasher you can probably hear in the background there. What's it like gigging? Do you expect...
Oh, yeah, because we can hear that.
Do you expect...
good timing, we're putting that on, Joel.
Poor turnout, or...
Is that going to go for the whole time?
Yeah, it might do.
Yeah, who cares? It's realism, guys.
It's a bit of fun.
It's annoying because some promoters don't think about that, and then... Mm. A week before your gig gets cancelled because they're like, oh, no one's going to come because the football's on. Mm. Or if England do well, some people don't anticipate that they will do well, and all of a sudden there's a semi-final on the day of a gig. So that's annoying. But quite often promoters will change the time slightly just to adjust so people could watch the game and then, or the other way around. Mm. I don't know. I remember it's quite fun sometimes because I've watched quite a few important football games with other comics sort of near a venue, which is quite fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't even looked at the fixtures to see if I have any clashes or anything. So I don't know. Mm. Although I haven't got a gig tonight. I had a cancellation, and I know a lot of comics haven't got gigs tonight, and maybe that's a thing that there aren't as many being put on because everyone knows it's the first day.
Yeah, it could be.
Of the Euros. I don't know.
It's England and Scotland next Friday, so I imagine.
Oh, there you go. So we could do a live diary check.
So it's England Croatia tomorrow afternoon.
Oh no.
Next Friday's England versus, what have you just found? Are you gigging in Glasgow next Friday?
Yeah. No, I've got three. I mean, this is a little bit of a boast. Got three gigs on Friday. Are they going to get ruined because of the football? What time's the football?
England Scotland. I think
it'd be the afternoon.
I've got a feeling it's 5 p.m.
Oh, that might be fine then. And it's in Brighton, and people in Brighton don't like football, do they? They're more arty in Brighton.
Oh no, it's 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock.
Oh,
England versus Scotland.
Shit,
8 o'clock on a Friday.
Shit, they're goddamn bed.
Cancel
that's gonna. That's gonna. Oh god, that's gonna cause issues, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Well, these people. We won't have any football louts at the gigs.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh no. I hope they don't. Yeah, it'll be fine. It's a part of the Brighton Fringe. So that's not gonna. They're not gonna change anything, are they? Last minute.
Nah.
Oh, but also I'd like to watch that.
Oh well.
Yeah. Duh. Oh dear. Anyway, that's a bit of a downer there. You think they thought the COVID chat would be the downer?
Yeah, I know. There we go.
Yeah. So I'll be chatting away. I'm itching, Joel. I'm itching to crack on, and I'm itching because I did a gig by a river. No, lakes, by some lakes. Wednesday and Thursday night. And those little bugs have bitten my back to shreds.
Oh, no.
20 bites.
Who counted them?
I did, in the mirror.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh. Is that weird?
20 bites? How many bugs do you reckon? One very hungry bug or 20?
Well, I was wearing a shirt, so something got in and then it couldn't get out.
And it went crazy.
Just, yeah, it loved it. So yeah, that's annoying, but it's feeling a little bit better today. Jolie boy, we've got a podcast to crack on with, and it's late, so we do apologise, everybody. I hope you enjoy it, and we'll be back to normal next week. I should have thought, won't we, Joel?
Oh yeah,
back on time next week, and also for our lovely Patreon subscribers, we have got a cracking 361 jokes, five at a time. Ready for you as you hear this, I think. Yes. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And an extra podcast, extra, with today's guest. And if you want to find that, that's at joke. Where is it? patreon.com/jokeswithmark. And who is this week's guest, producer Joel?
It could only be Garrett Millerick.
It's Garrett Millerick! What a lovely chat I had with Garrett Millerick. Garrett Millerick was at my first gig back, and I was like, I like Garrett Millerick. I think Garrett Millerick's very funny. Let's get Garrett Millerick on the podcast. And you know what I did, Joel?
You did just that.
See? How would you describe what you do then as a, like...
High-level consumer complaints.
It's difficult to say because you kind of... You get people swept up in it. It's kind of how I'd sort of describe it, because you sort of go on these rants and just keep going and the audience just come with you and it's just bang, 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 bang.
I'm being unreasonable for people.
Yeah.
I think is that I'm a very unreasonable person, and I think it's I think people who like my stuff like watching someone be that unreasonable about things, like pushing everything as far as you possibly can to the point of absurdity.
Yeah, so is that, so they're all your real opinions and then you just go with it, is that?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're heightened versions of my opinions, I suppose. Like, I will take but I've got no problem being the object of my own scorn. You know, I will take, if I can find a logical fallacy in something, I whether or not I like, I believe in it, because look, comedy isn't politics. I know there's been a lot of confusion about that recently. And everyone's like, you know, comedy is for social change. And it isn't. Comedy is a useless tool for social change. Using comedy for social change is like the time that I tried to bash in a tent peg with a book because I'd forgotten the mallet. And I ruined the book and bent the tent peg. And it worked after a fashion, but it wasn't the best way to do it.
Nothing has ever actually changed.
No, you can't, because comedy...
Because of a routine.
No, humor is actually... Humor is a release valve. So... So you can't actually, you know, revolution and social change tends to come at a point where there is no, where things are so desperate, there's a breaking point. So if you have like clowns constantly offering release valves, then it tends to simmer everything down a little bit.
Dilutes it, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not dilutes it. I think it's a good thing. You know, the George Orwell on the, when he was writing on the Road to Wigan Pier was talking about like why extremism didn't take off in Britain in the 1930s. And one of the things is we had the availability of cheap luxuries in a way that they didn't on the continent. And and we also had music halls. And that sort of, you know, release valves and things allow people to be more reasonable. So I find that funny when people are trying to use comedy as an extreme tool on one way or the other. If they're, you know, we're going to change things with this, and you know, you have this sort of ridiculous fight of you know, you've got people saying, you know, I want to be able to say whatever I like, and then people say you can't say that, and then they're on the kind of extreme fringes and they're trying to use this thing that doesn't work for what they want to use it for. And I find it absurd. So there's a rant for you, yeah.
so when you do a bit that doesn't go right, is it mainly that they don't get on board initially for the idea? Because I imagine with your stuff, once they're on board with the idea,
it's about getting the thesis out early, isn't it? It's difficult to explain because I'm sort of looking at this going, if something doesn't work, an idea or something, I tend to abandon it very quickly. So I don't have a huge sort of store of things that don't work. Like I was trying to work out this bit a couple of years ago about money and how people think it would be great to have loads of money. But the thing about money is like an organism, and it comes with responsibilities and stress and pressure. And I personally, I'm not good with money. So if I had a lot of money, that would be bad for me. I would find the management, because you have to manage money. Like it's a thing, and you have to have the skill set to do it. So I was trying to equate it with, I would have no more idea what to do if you gave me 10 million pounds than I would if you gave me 1,000 pigs. Okay. So there are people, you know, there are qualified farmers. If you gave me 1,000 pigs, they know exactly what to do with 1,000 pigs.
Yeah.
If you gave me 1,000 pigs, it would be a fucking nightmare. But I couldn't get an audience to buy into that that premise. Yeah. But I was, you know, sitting down with a notebook going, oh, this is great. I can talk about like people from school coming around to your house and asking for bacon. But, you know, but I just couldn't, I couldn't get the...
Your pocket bacon.
Yeah. People coming around like going, oh, you know, family. You go, oh, maybe I'll give a family member a pig. But just this idea of something that we think of as being, you know, the root of all happiness,
comes with
inherent responsibilities and the requirement of a management skill set, which most people, particularly me, do not possess.
So what do you do wrong with money? Do you just spend it weirdly?
I'm not a really enumerate person, and I'm not because, you know, I'm a professional clown, so admin's not my thing.
Yeah.
So, like, first off, if you give someone 10 million quid, you can't just put it in the Abbey National. Like,
yeah. I mean, I've often wondered this, actually. If you won, like, the lottery, what actually happens?
Well, I think the lottery, they give you, like, an hour or two with a financial advisor.
Right.
Where they go, like, maybe do this. But, you know, there are all sorts of tax breaks, implications and things to do with investment. And investment's quite complicated. Mm. So... you'd have to sort of stop what you were doing and try and sort of retrain in the bassist from Guns N' Roses, Duff McKagan, when he got off cocaine in the end of the 90s, he sort of realized that he was being ripped off left, right and center by his record company and things, because, you know, artists generally are. Mm. So he went to university and studied finance management, and he's got a couple of degrees in it.
Oh,
and
wow.
He now like runs courses for, runs a not courses a consultancy excuse me mm. For people, for artists on that level, to kind of explain financial breakdown sheets and all that sort of stuff too. So yeah, like, I've got to go to Bristol later to tell some jokes, and if you gave me 10 million quid at lunchtime, that's just so much stress. And also then you've got this tax implications to that, like where you put it, what you do with it. It would not be... You'd be like, yeah, okay, I can buy things. But when you buy things, they don't generally, or for me anyway, they don't make me happy.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't stop doing it, because no one does, because we're sort of presented that is an ideal of happiness. Go and buy something and make yourself feel nice.
Yeah.
Like when all the shops opened up after COVID, I was like, oh, I'm going to go down into town and buy something, and just wandered around going, I don't want anything.
So do you think people are so bought into that whole idea of money will make you happy that that's why they couldn't get on board with what you were saying? Like, they're so sort of...
Yeah, I think the idea of the concept of money being a commodity, and commodities need to be managed, and so you can compare that to pigs, they were just like, no, I can't make the connection.
that's funny.
Which is fair enough. They're out for a night out. They're like, no, I don't want to think about that. Because also, it doesn't.
It's a nice way, because anybody, it's a good example. Anybody in that audience, if they were given 1,000 pigs, wouldn't know what to do with them. So
they don't have a clue. They think they'd know what to do with 10 million quid, but you know.
Yeah. Okay.
It would cause the same problems. Like, people, like, you know, get to sundown, you go, what are you going to feed these pigs? Like, where are you going to put them? Where are you going to put 10 million?
Are we going to split some over there and put some over this one? Stuff.
Yeah. And then you're like, okay, well, I don't know what I want to do with these pigs yet. And then all these people show up and go, I'll tell you what to do with the pigs. But you don't know if it's right to farm them or kill them.
And if you do this with these pigs, you'll get some more pigs.
Yeah. It's just like, you'll never need any more pigs. You've got this many pigs, right? These pigs make more pigs, like money. But yeah, it just seemed like a thing that I couldn't quite...
Yeah, so how many times would you have tried that before bailing on it? Excuse the pun. Well, the pigs don't eat hay, do they?
They don't know.
It's a farm related pun.
Yeah. See, this is fun. It's exactly the sort of thing I can't.
I love the way you say fun with such disdain then. Yeah, this is fun.
It's not my thing. Fun. I'm not known for being fun. I don't know, once, twice?
Yeah. And then you're just like, if they're not going to buy into it, because with yours, it's a concept idea, I suppose. So just rewording wouldn't make a difference.
Well, it's that thing, isn't it? I've got a pile of ideas, and if one of them's going nowhere, the other ones are. And I tend to do this when I'm working up shows. So I'll sort of start trying to put shows together in like 3-4 months.
Okay. And wow.
I'm not that diligent, so I do it around stage time. So if I generally don't have enough time to truck with conceptual ideas that aren't working.
Yes. I paint, okay.
Like I write and produce things based on putting myself under an unnecessary level of stress.
Yeah.
So I've never got enough time to finish things. So I tend to in the last month, like not sleep, be up all night and that sort of thing. So if there's something that isn't, that I just can't get an audience with a couple of times, I just have to bench it. And
so the good thing with your stuff is, though, once you have an idea, that's usually a big chunk of stuff. So you only need a few chunks of stuff and you've got a show.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. It's usually sort of stories, and a lot of the stories I tell are true. So it's finding that, working out what the story is and then how to tell the story, what the angle is on the story, where the toppers are and where the angles are and the switches and things. I did a show a couple of years ago that had a very sad story in it, and the challenge of making that funny, I mean, the first couple of times I did it, there was the front of the show was funny and the second bit of the show was an awful story, just a very a very sad story that I had to, but I had to go on stage and just tell it as a sad story to work out what the mechanics of the story are. So when I'm working out a story, you have to work out what bits you leave in, what bits you leave out and stuff, and you have to do that on stage and get a feel for it, and then keep working on it and keep working where the angles are, where the jokes are, and sort of build it like that. But working with the skeleton of what the story is, like the bare bones sort of, the girders underneath, and going, right, you need this and stuff for it to function as a story. And then you just keep going back over it and back over it and back over it, embellishing it with jokes and idiosyncrasies and performance features and things to turn it into a routine.
So how did you transition from like the normal kind of funny stuff in the first half into the sad story? Did you sort of preempt it and tell them?
I just told them.
Okay, so you've sort of prepared.
It came a bit in a story where it sort of had a natural point. But no, I did try in previews and things to work out what would be a funny way of getting into the sad story, and there wasn't one. sort of try it a couple of times. No, there isn't. So the best thing to do there is just honestly go, right.
Yeah.
Here we go. And it did end up in the show. It was very funny. But it sure as hell wasn't the first two or three times.
So that's something you knew you wanted to do. So you actually stuck with that until you got that right.
Yes. Yeah. That was, we were sort of committed to that. That was not a, hey, wonder if I can get people to think of money as pigs and pigs as money situation.
So after doing that show, by the end of it, was it a good, you were happy with the sad bit and how it all came together?
No, it worked very well in the end.
And would you still do a similar thing in the future with a show?
Well, no, because that was a very particular set of circumstances to tell that story. It's not, I wouldn't look for a sad story. Basically I was working on a show and something sad happened and I couldn't finish the show. So the show went on three quarters of the show that was finished. And then the end bit was about why I couldn't finish that show. And the thing happened whilst in the run up to the show. So it wasn't circumstance, I guess, sort of made that the only thing that I could do at the time. But no, I'm not one of those people been doing an Edinburgh show or something where
the sad bit?
I'm hunting for a sad bit.
Yeah. It's one thing I've never been able to do with mine. It just really doesn't work.
Sad one-liners. Well, you can't sit in a sad one-liner, can you? That's the sort of point. I was doing a gig last night, a new material gig, which is the first new material gig
I've done.
Since we came back, and I was going through piles of things that I was working on when the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
Because I did have COVID stuff that I did on Zoom gigs. And then I ended up sort of writing for some things and gave those jokes to that. And I've got this sort of feeling. Yeah, I had sort of COVID stuff and then I sold it. I was like, well.
But hey, I don't think people are going to want it.
No. It wasn't like, I want to hold on to that. That's mine. It was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll sell that. So, last night I had a bit, it's quite a young, trendy London audience, and it was about it was about being 37, a 37-year-old dad living in the suburbs, and that all of these things that people are protesting about, like the environment and all these things, like I haven't got time for them anymore.
Right.
Because they're not in my, I can't go out and protest the environment and things like that. Cause I've got the things that concern me are things like DIY. So I had this joke, which is I never get jokes to work. I had a joke. I invented the self-fulfilling prophecy. It probably won't go anywhere, but still years ago. And that never works on stage, But in the last 6 years, that has appeared in best jokes lists in six national newspapers.
So you've submitted it, but it just doesn't suit you on stage.
It just doesn't work on stage. And
yeah. Oh, that's funny. Have you written other jokes like that over the years? That,
well, I think this one last night might be one of those. But it's just funny when you get those emails going, do you have a joke? I always just, it's just become a thing with me now. I will just send that joke and see how many times I can get them to print it. So it's like, it's really moved up the charts as well. In 2012, its first placing was 99 in the 100 best jokes at the Edinburgh Fringe. And I think it's been in top 10 lists since, which that's to do with my relative success rather than the merits of the joke. And that, you know, that's a look behind the curtain of the, you know,
don't tell everyone
the horror of the industry. That, yeah, it's not merit based. That little joke has been working very hard for 9 years, but yeah, it just keeps.
I love it. It's got its own little story. Yeah, like, yeah, it's, yeah, achieving it's something.
Yeah, it's now a satirical Trojan horse that I use to expose the fallacy of best joke lists.
It's nice having something that you can tell people if they say "give us a joke" when they find out you're a comedian, or do you just avoid that totally?
Oh no! I always ask them for money, which stops the guy tell us.
But
joke.
You won't know what to do with it. What if I gave you a pig?
No, I mean, I'll know. I don't. They're not 10 million quid. I'll be like, I will tell you a joke for £175 because it's Thursday and that's a reasonable price. but if you don't want to pay, then piss off. I'm not at work. It's such a weird thing. Like going, hey, you dance monkey, without any of the context for.
Love that. There's a Bob Monkhouse joke, which is a classic, of people say, you know, you're a comedian, tell us a joke. I don't, like, come up to you and say, I can't remember, he does a few of them. It's like a rule of three. And the last one's, you're a politician, tell me a lie. Yeah, it's like a real classic Bob Monkhouse joke. That. So that's just been happening for years, is people. So, just...
Yeah, some people get very, I don't know if you find this, like, people get very sort of annoyed if they find out you're a comedian and you're not being... entertaining.
Do you find that at parties and social gatherings and things, when people
particularly when you don't know anyone and you go, because I always just say I'm unemployed or I'm a writer or something.
That's good. Yeah,
yeah, which is getting harder and harder to do, and then normally now people offer it for me, and and I don't like parties anyway, so
that surprises me.
Yeah. I'm not, it's not my sort of thing. I've given up smoking as well, because normally now I just go and smoke outside and try and find someone to have a proper conversation with. But yeah, I was at a gathering of people I didn't know who were connected to my wife a number of years ago. And there was the office card was there, who he was really, he found out I was a comedian, so he was really sort of turning it on, and he was a real tedious arsehole. So, and then
so he's threatened by you,
well, trying to impress me or something. I have absolutely no idea. And then there was a woman there who was like going, well, you know, what about him, he's very funny, and you haven't said anything funny. And I was like, I have not said very much at all. And then she was going, she was saying to me, he's like James Corden. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And she was like, and you don't know, that's how things happen. James Corden would have been like him one day. And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, this is how James Corden was discovered. I was like, no, James Corden was in the National Youth Theatre when he was 11 years old. He didn't get to host a late night show on American television because he was running his mouth off at a barbecue. But like, I'm sorry I'm disappointing you, but you're being weird.
That sounds like a bit. That's really funny.
But then it's inside baseball, isn't it? You're going to do a 15-minute routine of why I don't like going to weddings. And my wife said to me after like the seventh wedding that we went to together, the guy who was sitting next to me got up to go to the toilet, and she turned around to me and said, "I get it now. I get why you don't like weddings." She was like, "It's not that people ask you stupid questions. It's they ask you the same stupid questions in exactly the same order."
Yes, sir.
And I was like, and I was like, also, and there aren't answers to any of them. Like, what sort of comedy would you say you do? Stand-up comedy. Yeah, but I mean, like, what type is it? Like, who's your favourite comedian? Do you like that Mrs. Brown's Boys? And you sort of go, it's like, it's well meant. Like, and obviously, you know, it happens to everyone. It doesn't, not just comedians. Like, a friend of mine's a doctor. And whenever he goes to a wedding, people are like, "I've got this thing with my back." Yeah. And he's like, "Yeah, we'll go and see your GP." And they're like, "Would you have a look at this?" And he's like, "Absolutely not, no."
It's funny that, isn't it? There are some jobs that happens to. I wonder what other jobs there are that...
My cousin is an artist. A very good one. And we were at another cousin's wedding, sitting on the table, and somebody around the table who was a doctor, who was a real arsehole, he found out that he was that Elby was a painter. And he was sort of saying to him, "Well, maybe you could paint something for my surgery." And it was really patronizing and really fucking weird. And Elby was like, "Yeah, it's like my next six canvases are pre-sold." And the guy's like, "People will buy a painting before you've even done a painting." You're like, fuck me.
That's like whenever you say, like, you're a comedian, they go, "What, for a living?"
Yeah.
But you actually earn money doing that.
Yeah, yeah. The idea of, like, where this gets monetized is very confusing for people.
Previous girlfriend's parents, I think, have always had that kind
of... Yeah.
Like they can't understand that it's a job.
Yes, it is. Because people shouldn't... Look, people shouldn't think of this as a job. It's not helpful.
No.
To think of it's just us as a bunch of dead-eyed industrialists trundling up and down the motorways of the country, shoveling out the same material for cash. People want to think of it as a sort of jolly magic trick.
Yeah. That's true, actually.
But you must let us know the next time you're doing one of your shows, and we'll come.
One of your stand-up comedy gigs. They'll say in that full, one of your stand-up comedy gigs.
Wednesday. What?
Yeah,
Wednesday in Hull. you're committed to this now.
I'll pick you up.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. We can cunt people off in the car.
So this new material gig you did last night.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I'll tell you the bit, and then I say to my friend, like, I'm trying to work out how to get Artex off my ceiling, and he says, "What's Artex?" And I said, "Never mind about that." And he said, "Look, you have to join me on this protest march, because there are people in Britain living with historic crimes that have been done in the places they live, the repercussions of which they are living with to this very day." And I say, "You said you didn't know what Artex was." Wallop.
So how did that go?
Well, it went very well amongst certain people in the audience, but about 75% of the audience, complete confusion. And then they broke into a conversation around one of the tables. So I inquired about what the conversation was. And they were all Googling Artex. Because the problem there is you're trying to do, I'm trying to sort of do a joke about perspective of, you know, my perspective has changed being a father in the suburbs beyond what it was when I was in my 20s in the city. But then... when you go into cities and you're doing that to 20-year-old people, you're doing a joke about how you speak a different language to them, and you're doing it in a different language, so it functionally doesn't work.
So it's interesting that. So what would your takeaway be from that? Because you will do a lot of gigs where it's not going to be that audience. So do you want something that is going to work with everybody, or will you just be like, well, that's okay, most audience won't be full of those people?
Yeah, I mean, there's a fat white bearded guy in the corner in an anorak who's chuckling away at that, and that'll do me. No, I do at least sort of notionally strive for a certain amount of universality. So, so I think, bearing in mind I've only been thinking about this for a couple of hours, I'm going to have to work out a routine to come before that joke about what Artex is.
Really?
Yeah. So that's the thing. Well, that's, I guess you're coming back when you're getting people to get on board with these things. You have to give them all of the toolkits that they need to unlock the puzzle. like in a longer thing with things like I'm doing. Like one of the things, my things, I have to sow all of the seeds in the routines and where I'm building up to for everyone to enjoy why I'm upset.
Right. Yeah.
So I can't start at 200 miles an hour. I have to build up. And part of the build up is leaving all of the tools that people require to do the puzzle with me. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's interesting.
So yeah, I'll have to sort of prefigure or get bored and drop it. I mean, to be honest, I'm really re-energized about the pig thing after we talked.
That thing you did where you asked the audience, I do that a lot with new material gigs, because when you're trying a joke, you don't know how it's working in their brain.
Yeah.
So I quite often will, if something gets a half-hearted response or someone looks confused, I'll always ask them what they were thinking during the setup. Mm. Like that, like had I tricked or sort of had I taken them down the road I wanted to take them down enough? Yeah. Because I wish I could think of the example, but I had one the other day and I hadn't taken them far enough down the path before turning the other way and they saw it coming.
Yeah.
Whereas I needed a couple of extra factors in the setup so that they were fully committed to that road before I took the rug out. But I wouldn't have known that unless I'd said to them, what exactly were you thinking when I'd said it?
Yeah, I think it's really important to do that. I a couple of years ago, or whenever the last Edinburgh was, 2019, I had a piece about mental health in at the end of it, and it was to do with celebrities and princes and whatnot telling us about their mental health. So the line is, like, people go, we're destigmatizing, we're removing the stigma from talking about mental health. And then I say, well, could we put some of it back? And then I sort of go in, but then there's a qualifying bit I do about people who have genuine problems, and that, you know, a celebrity whinging, I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow, I used as an example, whinging about something wasn't helpful. Like, it's not removing stigma from things. It's actually, it's hoovering up the valuable resource that is people's attention. And therefore it's, whilst you're saying it's constructive, it's not, it's very destructive, and it's removing attention away from people who actually need help. And I did that in a preview at Hot Water just on the way up to Edinburgh. And I missed out three lines in the qualifying bit, which were required structurally for the piece to function and have balance and for the comedy about it not to be cruel. And this guy came up to me to talk to me about it afterwards, and he had had struggles. And he was really respectful and really polite, and we talked through it, and all of his criticisms were completely valid. And I said to him, like, oh, right, yeah, no, there is this bit that I forgot to do. And I was like, oh, right, okay. And he was like, oh, okay, I felt this way about it. And I was like, okay. So, yeah, we had this really great conversation for about 10 minutes. And that meant I was, for the then driving from Liverpool to Edinburgh, I was like, right, okay, this cannot, these lines have to be here, and they have to be in this place for this to function. And if they don't, I will make people feel bad, one or two people. And it's that's not okay. So there are certain things when you're telling stories that are like details or whatever that you can be glib about or not include. But if you're trying to do something like that, every single structural peg of it has to be correct, or it will go off in your face, and it deserves to. So that's really good about previews. And yeah, when people are, because if he'd gone like, I didn't like that, da, 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 and we got into an internet style argument about it, that would have been really unhelpful. But somebody coming up as a kind of rational human being and being like, hey, about that, and then you having a real functional conversation about it that is brilliant. Yeah,
which is why it's the whole kind of cancel culture thing of like taking a comedian out of context and quoting it or whatever, like a comedian could just be trying to work something in and hasn't just quite got the angle right, even though, you know.
Yeah. Also, if you quote jokes in print, the actual writing of the thing, a performance is the writing and the performance and the room and the energy and the people and the people's reaction, and you know, you're on. It's basically, you know, you're on an aircraft, and there are like 7 or 8 different flight controls that are going and a load of passengers. And then you're going, okay, I'm going to take the reading of one instrument from that plane and go, here you go.
Yeah, and that's like, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. You're ignoring all of the other things that exist. But that's one of the problems with the internet anyway. If you like, human beings don't speak to each other in the way that they do on the internet, because we have all of these evolutionary, these things that we've developed where we look into each other's eyes and, you know, you can empathize with people and you can see how things are delivered. And you know, a stand-up comedy performance is a very advanced form of that, where it's a shared experience between a group of people and somebody using all of the tools of language and physicality and energy and performance, using a huge vast toolkit to create a reaction. And the sheer ignorance of taking one piece of that and saying that that gives you a comprehensive understanding of what was happening is absurd.
Yeah, 100%. That joke from Hot Water, did that, the change, the bit that you missed out, affect the funny, or was it just affect how it would make certain people feel? Like, did you still get a laugh? Did you realise you'd missed
it? I still got a laugh, but it's the sort of thing where, you know, I was pulling people along with things. I don't mind being cruel in a joke, as long as I can justify it to myself. And I think if that, I don't want to make people feel bad, but I don't mind.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
No, to describe that, you know, you can push. Like, I used to have a routine where I come out and talk about killing old people, and again, it's context and things, but the justification was I was just taking, at the time, lots of people were doing fuck teenagers routine, so I just flipped it on its head and re-engineered it.
You couldn't do that now so much. Not in this.
No, I reckon I could. fuck old people. We just had a national festival of fuck old people, didn't we? It's not like last 14 months. I don't think you took the temperature of Britain in the last 14 months and went, how are we feeling about the elderly? Pretty ambivalent, if I'm honest. Now, I'm going to watch Netflix. Is there any chance you can wear a mask? No, it's my civil liberties. Well, you might kill someone. Yeah, but only old people. Fuck them.
Maybe it's because of your routine, mate. Maybe you sparked all that attitude.
I sincerely
that could
hope
have been
so.
You.
Yeah. It'd just be nice to know you had an effect, negative or otherwise. I could sell. There were lots of jokes in the bit, and I could sell it, but it was just missing qualifying bits, which were funny as well. So it was funny, but it was unbalanced.
That's great.
Yeah. So it was necessary, well, certainly for me, and to put it in a show and it be something that. You can stand next to and go. And also, the routine got misquoted in Sky News after the festival by somebody writing an article about mental health in sport. Now, I know nothing about sport. And I certainly have never commented publicly, privately or otherwise on mental health in sport. But this article on the Sky News website, which I found out about, I was on the way back from End of the Road Festival, and my mum contacted me via text to say it was very exciting. I was on the Sky News website because her friend Jenny had just been round to tell me. And then I asked her for the details of this, and she didn't have any, but thought I would be pleased. So I then had to go looking for this thing and found out it was one of the top articles on the sports section of Sky News. And I called her up and I was like, this is an article. The first three paragraphs of it are calling me a cunt. I think I said, like, it's calling me a cunt. And my mum said, yes, but you get all of the first three paragraphs.
Yeah, you're a famous cunt.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't say any of the things that this person is saying that I said. And I certainly didn't say them in the context that they are suggesting I did. But it didn't bother me at all, because I was perfectly happy about what I'd said and the way I'd said it and that it was balanced. Therefore, the criticism didn't get to me. Whereas, you know, when the guy came up to deliver criticism politely and in person and not on the Sky News website, he was right. He was absolutely right, because I'd forgot to balance the thing up. So I did take that away, and it did bother me, and it bothered me into making sure I was very diligent when doing that routine, that it was balanced. And then, you know, if somebody wants to say that I said something that I didn't on Sky News, it's not going to keep me awake at night.
Aye, yeah, crack it. Garrett Millerick! Ha 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 ha, hashtag Ooga to Garrett Millerick. There he is. Great stuff. Any feedback for the podcast, let us know at Jokes with Mark on all social media, and we will report back whatever you say next week. Go check out all the crazy bonuses over on patreon.com/jokeswithmark. And is there anything more for me, Joe?
There's nothing more for me, Mark. Anything more for you, Mark?
Nothing more for me, Joe. Hashtag Awoga, everybody.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.